Okay, great. We're recording. Hello, everybody. I hope that you're doing really, really well today. I've been thinking about all of you. For those of you that were able to be there on Tuesday for our Get It Done session, I hope that it was productive for you from those of you that I spoke to. And those of you that have been posting on Facebook, whether you were at Get It Done or not, I'm really excited about the progress that you're making. Even for those of you that are, you know, like sometimes in moments spinning a little bit, it's like you're taking steps forward. So I'm so happy to hear that. And I want to hear from even more of you. So no pressure, but if you want my feedback, if you want my support, if you want my help, you know, beyond listening, to our trainings, please participate, ask me questions here and in the Facebook group, come to the Get It Done sessions, all of that. So today we're going to be looking at some new pieces. I want to add some more pieces for you. But before we go in there, I just want to acknowledge that a lot of you, probably most of you, are still working on last week's homework on your step-by-step methodology. And that's totally normal and it's totally expected. I expect you to be for most of you, and it's more than okay. So even though we're looking at, you know, to add pieces now, it's not like last week is complete and now we're moving on to the next step and you have to have completed it. Like I said, this is a cyclical process, right? We're going to keep on adding. You'll be going back, all of that. So, and in fact, this week's work will likely help you even more with last week. So today we're going to be looking at that six-step journey that I introduced to you last week. I introduced to you that six-step journey. We focused on step number four, which is your methodology. Today I'm going to be really breaking down what happens before your methodology and what happens after your methodology, and we'll have lots of time for Q&A throughout the call today. I'll be pausing. I know last week I kind of just spoke the whole time, but we'll be pausing for cues throughout the call today, and also at the end. One thing that I did just want to point out about your methodology, about that step four, before we continue, is probably some of you have started realizing by now, even though Curriculum Lab isn't a marketing course per se, I did want to point out that your methodology, what you're plotting out in that step number four, you know, your step by step, where the hero is starting, where the hero is ending, you know, what the steps, that's going to also, you're going to be able to use that a lot in your marketing, right? So when you market, you know, just a side note, but I think it's important and relevant, so I wanted to share it. When you market, the most effective marketing helps the reader, or if they're listening to you, helps them see where they are now, and activate a little bit like the discomfort around where they are now. Reminds them why they don't want to be where they are now in some cases, right? And then really good marketing also creates a vision for where they can be, right? That's the ending point. And then what a prospect also needs to know is they need a little bit of a painted picture on how you're going to be able to help them get from point A to point B, from where they are now to where they really want to be. And that's your methodology. That's your step-by-step methodology. So obviously you wouldn't, you know, put everything out that you have in a curriculum, but you can really pull a lot of it into your marketing to make it more effective. So I wanted to make sure I just kind of planted that seed in there for you. So last week we looked at that step number four, the methodology, which is kind of like the journey within that larger journey that you're taking your hero on. And you don't want, as I briefly mentioned last week, you don't want to just jump right in to your methodology. If you jump right into your thought leadership, your methodology, it's not going to be effective. A journey never effectively starts with go do this, right, or take in this piece of information. You, as the facilitator, as the practitioner, need to help your participants prep for the journey, prepare for the journey, right? So if we go back to that metaphor we were looking at last week with the road trip, you can't just, you know, like get in your car and take the road trip. You have to gas up the car, right? You have to get gas in there. You may need snacks for the road trip. You may need to, like, understand the lay of the land, look at a map before you start going, right? So we're going to talk today about how to adapt that into your curriculum so that your participants will really be totally prepared and fully open to receive your methodology, your thought leadership, your step-by-step solution. And then the other thing we're going to be looking at today is what happens after you present your methodology, because it's also not effective to just end with the last step of your methodology. Back to that road trip metaphor, you know, you've prepped for the road trip and then you've taken all of the steps and you've gotten to that final destination, to Los Angeles. The trip wouldn't be sweet if, like, and then that was it, end scene. You know, once you hit the destination, right, you want to kind of, like, get out of the car and enjoy where you've come to and really be able to take in the journey that you've just taken in. So effective journeys need proper endings. And by the way, that's the reason why graduations and funerals are so important. Without getting too much into, I have so much to share about cycles and how to use cycles when you support others. We do a lot of that in the Into the Depths facilitator and shadow training. But, you know, just a quick note about it now, one of the reasons why many cultures are so, you know, use graduations from school, or why so many religions have some kind of funeral, whatever it is, big, small, whatever it is because they help to integrate a life, if it's a funeral. They help to integrate an education, for example, if it's a graduation. And it also allows a marking of something has come to an end here. And that mark of the end of the journey is really important in order to enter into the next cycle. It wouldn't feel as important to end, let's say, high school education if there wasn't some kind of mark to it, right? Even if you're someone that doesn't like, you know, traditional graduation ceremonies, but to mark it in some way, it's also a celebration. Funerals too, by the way, right? One of the reasons why human beings need funerals for those that they love that have passed are because of eulogies. A eulogy is meant to celebrate that person's life. we need celebrations in order to honor what was and then in order to move on to the next cycle. And so we want to bring that into our curriculum as well. And so we'll get into all of the details of that. So let's look at the prep first. What are the steps that you want to take in order to prepare your participants for that step four, for your methodology, for the thought leadership? So if you remember, step one on that journey is you want to help your client or your participants remember why they're taking the journey. You want to help them remember why they're taking the journey. That's the first step. Now, let's talk about this. You may be saying to yourself, what do you mean I need to remind them why they're taking the journey? They've read my sales page. We've had a conversation. They've handed over money. They've showed up for the workshop. Of course, they know why they're taking the journey. Well, it would be great if that were actually the case, but the truth is that even once a client or a participant says yes to something and buys it and puts down money and even shows up, they've either forgotten why or they've lost some of that motivation, some of that inspiration, or they were never 100% clear in the first place. In order for anyone to be motivated to learn, to change, to grow, to be engaged, in order for anyone to be invested in all that you're about to teach them and share with them, they need a why, W-H-Y. They need a why. They need an inspired why to be there in the first place. So the very first thing that we want to do in our curriculum is get people excited and inspired and clear on why they're there. That's what's going to motivate them. So what does this step look like in your curriculum? How does that actually play out in a curriculum? And I'm going to speak now to, if you're leading a group, but you can use law of adaptation if you're using this for one-on-one work. So if you're leading a group, whether it's online or in person, no matter how long it is, one of the very first things that you want to do in order to help people remember why they're on the journey and for them to be really inspired is you want to speak, you as a facilitator, the teacher, the coach, the practitioner want to speak from an inspired place about the following things. Number one, why you're there, why as the leader you're even doing of this, why you're even doing this, why is this important for you, why are you invested in all that you're about to share and all the journey that everybody is about to go on. Number two, you want to speak from an inspired place about that collective endpoint that you're going to be taking people to on the journey. In other words, you're going to speak about the results that people are going to have. You're going to get them excited about the vision that they have because that's why they're there, right? They're there for the vision, for the results, for that end point. You're going to speak from an inspired place about that. You're going to speak from an inspired place about why they would want to progress and evolve from the place that they're currently in. So you're going to also talk to them about their, oftentimes call it the gap, right? where they are now that isn't so, they're not so happy about it, right? So, because that gives them a reason and motivation to want to progress and evolve and take the journey to get to where they want to go. You're going to speak about, again, this is for groups, you're going to speak about who is in the room. In other words, you're going to speak about them and why they're so amazing, why they're so inspiring, why they're the perfect type of person to be on this journey, right? So that they can locate themselves. Ah, I should be here. I'm in the right room, right? You're going to talk about what's possible on this journey. And also a little bit why the journey, right, why the course, the mastermind, whatever it is different from what they've had before, what they've experienced before. So a good way to think about this is it's almost like as the facilitator of a retreat, a workshop, a course, and even one-on-one, it's as if you're the leader of a movement or a revolution. And in step one, as the leader of that movement or that revolution, you're rousing and activating the community in front of you. You're helping the community build investment in the cause, right? Whatever the cause is of that movement or revolution. Another piece you can add to the step one, if it feels good and right and aligned for you, is your own personal story. So the hero's journey that you're about to take everybody else on, you may want to describe your own hero's journey, that relates to the starting and end points. When you do that, what happens is your participants, it's because really the story is about you, but it's really not about you. Your participants will then see themselves in your story and be inspired by it. Again, this is all about inspiration in order to build engagement, motivation, investment, energetic investment. So I wanted to give you, as part of this step one, in addition to, you know, all that I just shared around what you want to make sure you speak about and evoke in this step one, I wanted to give you a couple of other things to think about. Again, this is for groups, for the very beginning of the event. So this is a little bit veering into more of the facilitation side of things than curriculum. So I'm not going to get into detail in any of these, but I did want to bring them to your attention for now because they can help with this step one that I've been talking about. So, for example, a lot of times when I start events, before I give that inspiring talk that I just shared with you, whether it's in person or online, oftentimes I'll start with some kind of grounding. So what I mean by a grounding is a way for people to bring themselves fully present, to bring their minds, their bodies will be in the room or the virtual room if it's online. But, you know, life is so busy and we're running around and we have a million things on our minds and on our hearts. And oftentimes participants need a couple of minutes of an opportunity to bring all of themselves forward, to bring all of themselves present so that they can be in full attention, right? And you can get really creative with grounding. Again, grounding helps people open up to be able to receive. It can help create community. So one way that I love to just help ground people is through leading them through breathing together, right? Just, different ways of just having them close their eyes and breathe and get grounded and bring themselves in the room. And when people breathe together, they already start to connect energetically. So you're bringing the community together in that way. It's it can also just be a beautiful pattern break from the rest of the day, right? So that it's almost like the time that they're entering with you, whether it's in person or online, it's sacred time. It's different than the rest of the day where maybe they're rushing through things or multitasking or, you know, whatever it is. As I'm sharing this, I'm thinking, why didn't I model that for you guys at the beginning of this call? And maybe I'll do that next week. But, you know, creating this pattern break is really nice. In Jewish tradition, the Sabbath comes every week, and you don't just kind of like run into the Sabbath. It's not just like the regular week is done, and then Sabbath, the Sabbath is there. There's a pattern break that happens. You light candles, you say a prayer, you know, you do various things, right? And this happens in all different cultures, right, and all different religions, and it's just so wise. It's like we're moving from mundane to sacred. Let's mark that, right? So you have to be woo-woo or spiritual to do it. Again, literally, it could just be breathing, but some kind of pattern break. Another thing to think about is when you are creating that inspiration that I was speaking about a few minutes ago, so that people get really clear on the why. It doesn't have to just be what you tell your participants with words. You can build inspiration through so many facilitation avenues. You can evoke emotion. You can evoke archetypal energy. Sometimes, if I'm leading a retreat and the retreat is about setting boundaries, for sure in the beginning inspiration, when I'm doing all those things I spoke to you about before, I'm probably going to evoke the warrior woman. Because she's an archetypal image of being able to set boundaries. Things like playing music or drumming. I like to, when I'm in person especially, I'm a little dramatic. I like to get dramatic. I change the quality of my voice. I get it engaging. I'll do a storytelling where people are, you know, engaging with me, right? So you can get really creative. It doesn't just have to be like the speech that you do to get people inspired, blah, blah, right? Another thing that I like to do, and by the way, if you remember back to last week, I did these things, right? These pieces around getting, you know, inspiring and all of the things that I mentioned, I went through all of that last week. The other thing I did last week in this first section is you want to have each participant identify her why for herself. So you want to speak to the why, to the group, to the collective, but you also want to give everybody an opportunity, and it could just be through journaling or jotting it down like I did last week. But then you want to give everybody an opportunity to actually get clear on why they're there, to name it, to write it down for themselves, to have that clarity. I often like to ask people about their outer why, like what's the outer result that they want to have happen, and then what's the inner piece, what's the inner shift. If there's time, another really wonderful thing you can do as part of this step one is once people are clear on their whys, is to set intentions, and they can do it individually. You can do it ritually as a group. For those of you that are going to be with me in September for Into the Depths, we'll look at lots of different examples of how to do things like this ritually. When you're helping, you know, when you're prompting people to get really clear on their why, that can also be a great moment for community building and for container setting. Again, those are concepts that are more facilitation. We're going to do all of that and into the depths. But you know, just for now, examples like sometimes I'll start off by asking questions and having people raise their hands if it's a yes. You know, has anybody in the room, you know, back to maybe setting boundaries, you know, raise your hand if you've been in a situation in the last year where you felt like a doormat, where you've allowed somebody else to, you know, walk past your boundaries. Raise your hand if blah, 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 right? Whatever it is, it's just such a great opportunity for people to get clear on where they are and why they need this work. It creates community. You can do partner shares, lots of different stuff. And, you know, people don't have to only write down what their intentions are either, or what their whys are either. Again, you can get so creative here. You can draw your why. You can draw it on yourself. You know, just lots of different things. The other piece I like to include in this step one, and I also did this last week, I'm sure you guys will remember, is how to be most successful in the program or in the journey or in the retreat. And I'll speak to the best ways to use the program, depending on whatever the program is. Everything that we just spoke about around this step one, this step of helping your client remember why she's taking the journey, you also, you don't want it to be as long, but for each of your methodology steps, for each of the steps in the journey within the journey, and that's step four, you want to at least touch on this. You want to use this strategy in a shortened version at the beginning of many of your methodology steps. So let me give you an example of this. So in the second retreat of the Into the Depths training, which is all about learning how to work with your client's shadows and how to facilitate with archetypal energy. In retreat one, we've gone through all of the basics of facilitation and ritual. And I've gone through, you know, because it's the beginning of the journey, I've gone through all of that step one that I was already telling you about. And then in the second retreat, we go deep into shadow. And as part of that, we also go very deep into within that retreat. We've got a section that's kind of like life-changing around the shadow of comparison and jealousy. So we spend a good part of a day, or half a day, on the shadow of comparison. We could spend 5 days, but we spend about half a day on the shadow of comparison and jealousy so that you work it through for yourself, but you also know how to use it when you facilitate. And as you can imagine, this topic can bring up a lot for people, even for really evolved people who thought they were over their comparison issues, their jealousy issues. If I were to simply just jump into this topic, even though we have such a beautiful and tight container in the program at that point, but if I were to just start teaching on it, the women would be running from the room because, honestly, you know, who really wants to look at this stuff? So that's why at the beginning of that methodology step, at the beginning of that topic, I spend a bit of time on this step one. I spend a bit of time sharing why we're going to do this, why it's important, why it's inspiring. I frame it so that each person in the room can see the value of going into that methodology step. They can see the value of it for herself and then for her clients. Instead of just feeling like she'd rather throw up than look at it and heal through it. Okay, so that's step one. You're going to you want to do it at the beginning of the entire program, but then in some of your methodology steps, you may want to, you know, lean in there as well. All right, so let's pause here for a second. Still have a lot to look at today, but I just wanted to check in and see if there are any questions on step one. Star two. Anybody have any questions there? I'd love to hear, if there aren't any questions, I'd love to just hear from maybe one of you or two of you. What are you taking so far? Like from this step one, what are you really seeing that feels important for you? Star two, just so I know you guys are with me here. Priscilla.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
What I love about this, and it's a valuable reminder, is to what I feel as you described with step one, is that we are walking the path alongside the client.
Mm-hmm.
And as even as I hear what you're describing, I feel very supported. And so it's not like this disconnect or here's the curriculum and dumping it on someone and good luck with that.
Right.
Know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I love how you articulate it. It's like they feel that safety. They know that we're walking with them and we're preparing them for this. Thank you. Thanks for articulating that. Let's see. Who is this? 5921.
This is Johanna.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Joanna. So I guess my biggest takeaway is truthfully, I tend to teach too much content, and it's really often about my own insecurity that I feel like more is more important. But it's really about, I mean, truthfully, just it's about digesting. It's not how much people receive, but how much they digest.
Exactly.
And I have
to
constantly remind myself, and I appreciate you writing this out, this methodology, and reminding us tremendously. And it's so calming and heartful, you know, to get at this. These underpinnings. Thank you.
I can feel you're really getting it, and I can also feel, Johanna, that you're seeing where you overgive just simply out of your own like need for I need to be good enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that something is shifting here for you around giving what is needed in any moment as opposed to just dumping it all out there. And absolutely, it's not about how much you give. It's about how much they receive and digest. And I love how you put that. Thank you. And that's really helpful for everybody.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Who is this? 4372.
Hi, this is Blackie. Can you hear me?
Are you there? 4372. I took you off mute.
Hi, can you hear me, Joanna?
Not very well at all.
Okay, better now?
Yeah, that is better.
Okay, thank you for bringing this up because when I decided to break up the astrology natal chart course into two parts, I was wondering how I would bridge the first and the second because the second one really goes more deep into soul work like Pluto and Chiron.
Mm-hmm.
And so reminding them about the why is so important before starting the second part.
Yes. Yeah. So, I'm so glad you got that. Yeah, so it's for the beginning of the whole journey, but then there are certain points on that journey that you want to come back to it specifically for whatever the methodology then is. Good. Glad.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. And one more, Chrissy.
Hey, Joanna, can you hear me?
Hey. I can, yeah.
Hi. I just wanted to give like a little testimonial to this because I'm running the Aligned Female Entrepreneur course right now, and I'd run it before, and it was the same exact content, but I started using these pieces at the beginning of each module and at the beginning of the course, and I just simply like literally just followed step by step what you said, and I got email after email of people saying, wow, I'm just so excited. What an amazing group. Like, I could just feel the energy on the call. And I just wanted to share that because I'm realizing, like, it literally was these simple steps, but it changes everything. Like, not only am I experiencing feeling more inspired and confident and in it, but, like, people really get a whole different experience just by putting in, like, a few of these. So just thank you. Like, they're so simple, but it, like, really changed my entire course.
I love it. I'm getting chills when you're talking about it, and you're welcome. And I'm really glad that you're sharing it because it's great. Like, when I talk about it theoretically, you know, it may sound whatever, but it's really good for everybody to hear, like, how effective it is. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, let's continue. Let's move on to step two. So step two is help your client locate where she is right now, where she's starting on the journey. So that's already happened a little bit in step one, but I wanted to kind of pull this out just to talk about it a little bit more because it can really be its own step. So help your client locate where she is when she starts on the journey. So this is really important because it helps your participant understand that she's got work to do. And again, that's going to help her be more energetically invested and excited about the work that you're doing together. And in fact, it's part of the transformation process. When you locate where you're starting, it's part of the transformation process because awareness is so key to transforming anything. You can't transform something. And, you know, I'm guessing that anyone that's going to be in your course or working with you, they're there to transform something, whether it's inner or outer, right? You can't transform anything unless you have awareness of what you're ready to transform. Now, I know this is so obvious, but as teachers, we can forget this a lot, and we can skip over this step. But again, your participants, your clients can't change anything that they're not aware of. So that's why this step is really important. That's why you always want to help your participants locate where they are when they start the journey. This is also another one of those steps that you can also insert into some of your methodology steps. So you'll use it in this overarching way in the full journey, but you may want to insert it at the beginning of particular steps of your methodology. So, okay, what does this look like practically then, helping people locate where they are? Let me give you some examples. I recently, in the Sacred Depths coach training that I lead, which is a 10-month coach training beyond being a coach, I don't even know what to call it, incredible practitioner training, one of the modules in the training is learning how to support your clients to embrace the mystery. And so that's one of my methodology steps, right, is learning techniques for helping clients embrace the mystery. And I won't get into right now why embracing the mystery is so important to know how to do as a practitioner, but go with me here for a moment. So at the beginning of that module, we do a little assessment to help people locate where they are. So I ask people, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how comfortable are you with being in the mystery? On a scale of 1 to 10, how comfortable are you with letting go? Where are the places in your life where you're able to sit with not knowing, with being in the mystery? where are the places in your life where you've had difficulty really being in the mystery, where it ends up becoming self-sabotaging because you can't just sit with what is in the moment? How is that coming up with your clients that you're working with? Right? So I'm helping them locate, before I teach them the techniques and the underpinnings of how to work with the mystery for themselves and their clients, I'm helping them locate where they are with it. Or here's another example, back to what I was sharing a little while ago about in Into the Depths, we look at jealousy and comparison. Sometimes, as one of the things I do is in this step two for that, is I give the participants a checklist of ways, you know, they have an opportunity to kind of check off. I hand them a worksheet on ways that jealousy and comparison might be coming up for them. Because a lot of people at the outset, they're like, no, I don't compare myself, I'm not jealous, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I give them on that worksheet lots of different examples, and then they start seeing like, ooh, I really need to work on this. I thought I was past it, but I am not. Let me just look at my notes here. I think that's it. So that's step two. In one way or another, you want to help people assess where they are. You want to help them locate, like specifically locate where they're starting from so that they can see like, oh, wow, I really do need to work on this. Or these are the places where I'm good, and then these are the places where it would just be so valuable for me to work on this. So that's step number two. Let's look at step number three. Bring awareness to and honor the resistance before you get to your methodology, right? So you want to, the last thing that you want to do before you get into your steps is bring awareness to and honor the resistance. So even already, you guys have seen me model some of this. I may go a little bit overboard in this program because people have so much resistance to creating curriculum, right? But you've seen me model this for you already. We've already spoken about this a bit. But it doesn't hurt to explain some of the basics again and then go deeper. I just can't, I can't emphasize enough how, don't skip this. And I'm going to tell you why. Resistance, as I think you've already heard me say, resistance is part of human nature and part of the growth process, period. If you're going to grow, there's going to be some kind of resistance. For some people, it's stronger, and for other people, it's not as big of a deal, and we've already also seen that in this program. But in general, you can bet that if you're teaching a group of people on anything that's important to them, a good percentage of the people in the room or the virtual room, they want the growth and the transformation, but they're also, and excuse my language, they're also scared shit of it, okay? They're just scared shitless of it. They're scared because they have certain beliefs that are in their way. Or they're scared because whenever you grow, it also means that you need to change the way that you're doing something or the way or a way that of being that you've been being for a long time. And there's fear around that. Or maybe they're scared because whenever you grow, or oftentimes when you grow, you need to shift the way you show up in your relationship. And that feels scary. Or at the very least, you need to shift the way you're showing up in your relationship with yourself. Sometimes there's fear because people don't yet believe that the program is going to work for them, or they're in just such deep judgment because nothing has yet worked for them. On and on and on, right? resistance is a symptom of fear. And fear is just, there's some kind of fear always there when we're about to change and grow and transform and create big results. So what are ways that resistance, if you don't do this step, and sometimes even if you do this step, what are some ways that resistance can show up? What does it look like? Well, it can show up in lots of different ways. People may end up overbooking, so they just don't have time to show up. If it's, you know, online, they don't have time to either show up live or even listen to any of the recordings, right? They just kind of like check out of the program, or they don't do the work, or they don't take the work seriously, or all of a sudden they become lazy when they're not usually lazy. Sometimes the resistance can show up, I like to think of it as archetypes. I call it the resistance archetype. We go into these really deeply and how to work with them in the coach training, but I'll just name some of them for you now. You know, people will show up as the flake, right? Oh, my gosh, I'm 15 minutes late. I forgot the time, right? Sometimes it's legit, right? But when someone's in resistance, sometimes they can get really flaky. Or what I think is kind of harder sometimes than the flake, they can become the judge, right? They get real judgmental of the work and the teacher isn't good enough, or they're judging themselves or they're judging other people in the room. For some people, their kind of brand of resistance is they become the victim. Oh my gosh, this is so hard and I can't do it and I'll never be able to do it and I give up. And you, by the way, I'm sort of making a joke out of all of these, but if you are recognizing yourself in any of them, just know that you are not alone, okay? Like, I have been in all of these at one time or the other. So it's good if you're recognizing yourself in some of them. That's just a little nice inner awareness piece for you, right? Sometimes the resistance can show up as the confused one, a little similar to the flake, but a little different. It's like someone who's super smart, but like they just can't understand what you're teaching them, or they have a breakthrough and a new awareness, but then they're confused by it, right? Oftentimes, it's not because they're not smart; it's because there's some kind of resistance in the way. In groups, another resistant archetype that can show up. We also look at these and into the depths. But this one can show up in groups a lot. I call this one the teacher, right? She's in resistance. She doesn't realize it, and so she's the know-it-all in the group, the one that kind of tries to teach everyone but isn't participating, like really in it, in her own process. So we want to do, as facilitators, as much as we can to address, to avoid resistance, to preempt it. Because when we preempt it, then people are aware and it's less likely to come up. So I always recommend to address resistance in one way or another at least once in your curriculum. And honestly, more than once if you're doing work that you know is particularly stretchy for your ideal client. As a side note, but this is an important note, even when you address resistance head on or you preempt it in the way that I'm sharing now, even when you integrate it into your curriculum, it, for some people, and we've seen it in this course, like it will still come up, right? There's still going to be some fear, and that's okay. It's good. You want to create the awareness around it so that people don't kind of get into their little vortex in it. And again, the reason why it may still come up for some people is because it's a human part of it's part of human nature and part of human growth. So, again, just to drive this home, when you can address this before you get to your methodology and your solutions, people will be that much more open to receiving the methodology and the solutions. The more you frame, then the less you have to reframe. There's a saying that goes, an ounce of pre-framing is worth a pound of reframing. And what that means is if you take the opportunity to pre-frame, you know, in this case, resistance, beforehand, it will save you a lot of backpedaling work later. So all that being said, how do you address resistance preemptively? I'm not going to cover in Curriculum Lab how you handle resistance, like when it comes up in the room or, you know, in those resistance archetypes after you've pre-framed. That requires lots of skills and techniques that are related to curriculum, but really facilitation and coaching techniques. We do that in Into the Depths. We do that in Sacred Depths. But I do want to address I do want to talk about how to address it preemptively. So, first of all, call it out. You want to call it out. And there, I kind of have three steps to this. Step one is name it. You just want to name it. You want to speak to it, right? Like, call it out. You just say, call out the elephant in the room. So step one is name it. Step two is normalize it. So you don't want to just name it because people will recognize that they have the resistance and then they'll feel like freaks and there's something wrong with them and judging themselves. So what you want to do right away as soon as you name it is speak to why it's normal, right? You guys have heard me do this a number of times. It's normal. It's normal. It's normal to feel this. You're still meant to be here if you're feeling this or this is happening for you. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be successful if this is happening for you, right? And then the third step, after you've named it and normalized it, you want to give a solution around it. So let's say, I'll give you an example here. Let's say you're teaching about visibility strategies for business. You're teaching business owners visibility strategies. You might say, oftentimes when you start to take actions to create more visibility, even though you really want the visibility, a lot of fear can come up. You may not even realize that you're scared, but it might. The fear might come up as not taking the visibility actions or feeling like the strategy is stupid, or maybe you'll find yourself getting really busy instead of doing the visibility work, or you may even find yourself getting angry at me, the coach here. I want you to know that all of this is within the realm of normal. It's really just your fear showing up. That's all. It doesn't mean that you're not going to succeed in creating visibility for yourself. The key is this. If it happens, I want you to be aware of it. If it happens, I want you to ask yourself what you're actually scared of. And then it would be great if you also let me know about it too, so I can support you. So that's an example of just of preempting resistance, right? Now, you can go deeper, and I modeled some of that for you at the beginning of the program. I gave you that recording with the visualization and, you know, asked some questions to help you go deeper. When when you're, this is a little bit more of a facilitation piece, but I'll just mention, especially if you're in person, you can also get really creative with this. You can do a ritual around resistance. You can do releasing rituals. You know, there's lots of, it doesn't have to all just be through talking or talking and writing. And then again, as with the other steps, I don't only preempt resistance at the beginning of the entire journey. If I know that I'm about to teach a methodology step that's maybe a little edgy or that can bring up fear, I'll speak to resistance there as well. Or even sometimes like, I'll just leave it at that. Couple other things I want to say about resistance. Number one, another tool that you can use to pre-frame resistance are are agreements. I don't often use agreements. Really, when I'm teaching shadow and how to work with shadow with your clients, that's really the only time I personally use agreements. I usually get all this other resistance pieces in other ways, but some people really like to use agreements because it's like kind of cut and dry and super, super, super direct. So maybe you even use this yourself, or you've been in a workshop or a program where this has happened, but you know, the facilitator or the teacher may say, you know, I just want everybody to raise your hand if you agree to be respectful to everybody in the room. You know, raise your hand if you have a problem or get upset with me, that you come and let me know instead of stewing. Raise your hand, you know, if you agree that you're not going to speak over anyone else, or, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, in a way it's direct, but in a way agreements are a little less direct because oftentimes the facilitator doesn't explain why they're making the agreements, and then it sort of like hangs out. It can hang out as this weird thing in the room, like why is she asking me to, you know, agree to all of these things? If you're going to do agreements, I highly recommend giving context, like I did, you know, like I modeled for you a few minutes ago, and then going into the agreement. The more that you, as the practitioner, do your inner work around your own resistances, your own fears, and your own shadows, then the more adept you're going to be at addressing it in your curriculum and when you facilitate and when you coach. It's really hard to work with client resistance if you're not in the process yourself, right? Because you've got too many triggers and too many unchecked filters and all of that, and you don't understand it. That's why in my coach training in Sacred Depths and in Into the Depths, the facilitator training, we do a ton of inner work when I teach these skills, because the skills are only as good as how much you've done your own inner work around this. All right, so here's something to think about. When you think about your curriculum and your ideal client, what are maybe three of the most likely resistances that your ideal client would have to your curriculum? So, that might be, you know, some of the resistances I also haven't mentioned. You know, some of it is about the fear, right? So name out, like, what are some particular fears that your ideal clients may have to the curriculum? Because I want you to be thinking about that. But then there are other resistances. This is stuff you want to do in sales also, but it also sometimes you want to do it at the beginning of a program. Like, if there's resistance to the amount of time that it's going to take to create the result, you may want to speak to that. If you're leading an all-women's retreat, in a like sacred space, sometimes people have resistance to being in groups of women. They're not used to that, right? So that's stuff you want to address in your marketing, just a little tip. But it also may be something that you want to pre-frame when people get there. So what are maybe three resistances that you know are common for some of your ideal clients as it relates to your curriculum? That will just kind of help you start thinking more about this. All right, and let's pause here. Any questions on steps two or step three, or takeaways? What are you seeing and hearing that's important here for you? Star two, any cues you have for me on helping clients locate where they are or resistance or what you're like really seeing, what's lighting you up here, what's really clicking? Lucia.
Hi, Joanna. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. So I have wrote down a resistance that comes up often, and that's that my clients are thinking that the tools won't help them because they have to build over time. They have to do them several times so that they can see and feel the effects in their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go into resistance when it doesn't work in their first or second time.
Yeah.
They refuse
yeah.
doing them because they think they're useless.
Right. Yes. Good. So it's so glad. It's so glad. It's so good that you're identifying that, you want to pre-frame that. So before you teach or right after you teach the tool, you're going to say, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go and practice this. And after the first time you practice it and after the second time you practice it, it may not fully click in yet. And you're going to maybe for a moment feel like you're failing, like this isn't working for you and what are you doing and all of that. And I want you to know that's normal. That is part of
mm-hmm.
this process. It really takes X amount of time or X amount of practices for it to click in for most people. So I want you to be aware of that so that you don't take yourself out of the game if it doesn't work right away. And I want you to be aware of that so that you can stay really committed to this process.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Glad you brought that forward. It
Thank
was a good
you.
Reason for me to give some modeling there. Beautiful. All right, let's see. Stephanie.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, this is super interesting to me because I have created a group coaching program that I'm sort of in the middle of right now, modeled after some one-on-one coaching that I've done. And what I've done with one-on-one clients is I sort of have this arc set up where I introduce the idea of sabotage and all of that stuff around like week four or five of working together.
Mm-hmm.
Normally at the beginning, they're sort of riding this high of this new thing they're doing, and then the resistance starts to show up, and it's perfect timing to introduce it. But I've noticed with this group program, like, oh, wow, there was, like, resistance from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it's coming. But now, I don't know if it's a difference of individual versus group or what's going on, but I really appreciate the idea of putting that out there at the beginning. And I'm curious if you have anything to add about, like, I'm in the middle of a program, like, how do I was just going to introduce it sort of as normally I would,
mm-hmm.
But is there, like, a particular strategy I should use, like you're calling it reframing,
mm-hmm.
how would you introduce it if it already started to come up and the preempting hadn't happened?
Yeah, yeah, it's a great question. So what I would do is I would make it normal. So
mm-hmm.
what I would do is I'd say, so, you know, what I want to talk about today is sabotage. And if you haven't already noticed, you know, some of us are starting to go there. Some of us are starting to feel the resistance, you know, and explain, like I did on this call, why it comes up. and then say, and that's totally normal. This is just about the right time in the program where it starts to peak. For some of you, it peaked earlier. For, you know, for some of you later, for some of you, not at all. But, you know, this is about the right time. And so I'm really excited that this is exactly what we're going to be exploring today, how to support yourself through the self-sabotage.
Yeah.
Right? Awesome. So you just name it, normalize it, and then give the solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you noticed there being a difference in people working one-on-one versus groups in terms of how this shows up? I'm sure there
is. Well, that's why I'm saying especially for groups. I pre-frame for one-on-one sometimes, oftentimes also. But here's how you want to think about it. You know, when you're working one-on-one with someone, it's just naturally a tighter container because it's just the two of you.
Yeah.
It's a direct contact, you know, one-on-one contact. And so there's less opening. Resistance can still come up for sure, but there's less opening for it to come up, or there's less opening for you to not detect it early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a group, and, you know, when I teach people how to facilitate groups, I teach every single last tool how to facilitate with a super tight container, but it's still naturally going to be a looser container than a one-on-one. So it is more natural for the resistance to come in earlier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Priscilla.
My question is, what would you recommend if you are putting together an online course in terms of introducing the concept of resistance? I think that this training will likely be in a group format, but it could also be in a like an individual person taking themselves through it.
Mm-hmm.
It may actually start off as online, so and maybe individual. So if someone's going through a six-week online course, is it just good to have a paragraph where you describe it, or maybe some touch points along the way just to maybe bring it up, keep it simple?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, right? So in the beginning, you can do it kind of just like I've modeled, you know, just speak to it and ask people where the fear might come up and, you know, what their tendencies are. Like, how does resistance usually show up for you? Do you check out? Do you not show up? Do you, right? Like, so just to, you know, so people can be aware.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there are any, you know, topics in particular that it feels important before, you can dip back in, you know, and it doesn't have to be a big thing necessarily, you know, it can just be making people aware. And then, you know, I'd say like after you, I would for sure lead the program, not do it as a home study the first time.
Oh, no.
Right? And so when you do it, when you're leading it that first time or two, you're going to learn so much more about where people's resistances are and when they come up, and then you can get even more precise in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I'd say do that mention in the beginning, and then wherever you foresee it might happen, you'll be pretty covered.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Who's this? 1762.
Hi, this is Esther. How are you?
Hi.
I have a question about resistance in context. I'm preparing a one-hour presentation for a group where I'm not 100% sure what kind of people are coming. I'm sort of phrasing the advertisement in a way that I'm expecting people to read it and either it's going to resonate or not and they'll come or not. But I'm wondering about what if one gets hired to teach a workshop in a firm where not necessarily everybody is on board or where the employer hires you saying this is a good thing. but people are not saying, reading the advertisement and saying, yes, this resonates with me.
Yeah.
I'm on board. So I would expect.
Yes, it's such a great question. Yeah, it's such a great question. When you're hired by a firm, they're telling their people, you kind of have to show up for this, right? Same thing if you work with kids and the parent buys the thing and they tell their kid they have to come. It's a similar kind of situation. So you want to speak. Same thing applies. You actually want to name it, right? So somewhere in the beginning, you may say, I know some of you are here because you're really excited to be here. And I know that there's some other of you that are here because you're required to be here. And I just wanted to name that, and I just wanted to honor if you're not yet quite sure why you're here. It's totally normal to feel that way in this kind of workshop. And what I just want you to know is I'm going to be here for you to make this as interesting for you as possible, and to tailor it to your needs. So I want to really invite you to get your needs met. Let me know. You raise your hand a lot. Let me know what you need so that even if you're here because you have to, you walk out feeling happy that you are here.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes.
Right. So again, just remember, name it. Name it, normalize it, give a solution.
Got it. Great. Thanks.
Awesome. You're welcome. Great question. Take a couple more cues or takeaways. Christine. Are you there, Christine? Hello? All right. Looks like you were not there.
No. No.
Okay. Let's try Joanna.
Hi, Joanna. Quick question. I may have missed this, but was she help them locate the I am here on the map? Can you give an example or two of how you would do that?
Yeah. So I was talking about sometimes you can do it by assessment. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at, Johanna, I'm just guessing from the little bit of your work. So you might say, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how brave do you feel your culture and your organization is right now?
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't have to be 1 to 10 questions. It can be other questions that help people. You know, where you can ask, where are the places that you feel you're already being really brave? Where are the places where you sense you're not being as brave as you want to be? Again, I'm just making it up from the very little I know about your work, but is that helpful?
Yeah.
Think about it that way?
Very. I think I was just trying to make it more complicated than it is.
Good. Then I'm glad you asked.
All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Chrissy.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hey. I guess my question is, should the resistance be, if you're doing a group course, should it be brought up in the first session along with all of the motivation and sharing the journey? And
I think it should be in the order that I've shared. So, you know, in a group course, like let's say, I mean, we can even take Curriculum Lab. The first class was 90 minutes. I spent about the first 20 minutes going through steps 1, 2, and 3. And you might think like, oh my God, 20 minutes, that's a really long time. But again, pre-framing, better an ounce of pre-framing than a pound of reframing. It really helps set the tone. So I would do it as that step 3 before you step in, you move into that first step of your own methodology.
Okay, yeah, I think that my first session was a lot about, like, the why and the reasoning, and then the second session we talked about resistance, but you're saying kind of bring it all up in the first and then could address it later, too, if needed.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't fit it into that first, it's fine. You know, it can go into the second, but I have a feeling probably you could, but if not,
yeah,
if it's in that second, it's fine, too. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, still have a little bit more that I want to share with you guys today. So let's keep on going. So we got up to step 3. You all, hopefully at this point, know step 4 very well, which is everything we worked on last week, your own methodology. So now let's talk about what happens after you've given all of your step-by-steps in your methodology. We move on to step five, which is leading your client to integration. So again, steps five and six, like I said earlier, right, the endings are so important. You don't simply end college with your last college class. The graduation really brings it home. It seals it in. It helps you complete. Your hero needs this too in order to fully integrate and process and understand and follow through on next steps from your methodology. So step five is lead your client to integration. So what that step is about is you want to spend some time at the end asking, helping your client understand, so what just happened? What did I just learn? What are my takeaways, right? And you guys have seen me model this already at the end of last class, at certain points today, right? I'm asking, what are you taking away? I'm helping you integrate as we go along. The way that human beings learn and grow best is that they have a transformative experience, and the transformative experience is going to be your step four, that journey within the journey. And then if they can either put that transformation, that shift, into words, or even sometimes words, they can't do the words right away, but they can express the feeling of that transformation, then the learning and the growth goes deeper and makes a deeper impression in their brains, in their hearts, in their bodies, in their spirit. So I always like to ask people at the end of a retreat, at the end of a program, what are your takeaways? What are you taking away? What have you learned? What has been important here? By the way, I always do this at the end of every coaching session as well. The other reason, if you're leading a group, why takeaways are important is because it helps you as the facilitator track the progress in the room. It helps you make sure, and that's why I also do it at certain touch points in the methodology. It helps me track. It helps me know that people are getting what they need to get, that they're integrating, right? But the other reason why it's so valuable in groups, and hopefully you guys have experienced this already, is that when you hear other people share some of their takeaways, whether it's by voice or in a Facebook group or, you know, whatever it is, then you're reminded of some of your own shifts and more of your own takeaways, and you're validated in what you're learning, and, you know, it just it creates deeper integration in a group. So practically speaking, you know, for this step of leading people to integrate, you know, for one thing, you can just simply ask, like I said, what's your takeaway? What did you learn? When I do this in person, if it's at a retreat, I actually spend a lot of time on this. So, you know, the amount of time that you're going to spend on any of these steps obviously depends on your vehicle for your journey, right, on the format. Don't spend as much time in a program like Curriculum Lab as I would maybe in an in-person retreat or a year-long mastermind. When I do it in person, I'll spend time and I'll say make a list of all of your inner learnings and everything that you're taking away on an inner level. And then make a list of all of your outer learnings. And then which is the one that feels most important to you, like if it, like that you're happiest that you're walking away with. And then we have everybody share, right? But again, that's if you have time and space. Another way you can say, what are the top three things that you're taking away? Or have people make a list of their lessons and their learning. Or you can look at this through the lens of celebration. What do you want to celebrate? Which, by the way, all of this, all of these questions, whether it's in the language of takeaway or lessons, this is all about celebrating, which is similar to like to a graduation in a way too, right? We don't want to just name what we've learned. We want to really honor and acknowledge the journey. That's such an important component to being able to then move on and follow through with the work and get things done and continue to marinate in the shifts when you feel like you've accomplished something. It's really hard to get to a next place if you feel like you haven't received anything in the last leg of the journey, right? So by asking all these questions, it helps integrate, but it also helps honor or celebrate in a way. And then finally, step number 6, you want to help your participants seal in all the learning. It's a little bit different than integrating. You want to help them seal in the learning and look to the future. So the integrating is like the knowing, I accomplished this, and this, right? Or I learned this, and this. It's almost like if we put into back to that school metaphor, maybe it's like getting your grades at the end, right? Your final grades. Sealing it in is the metaphor we could use is like actually receiving the diploma, right? It's a little bit different. Get the grades, you celebrate, this is all I've learned, this is all I've accomplished. But receiving the diploma seals it in. It's like, I'm completing this now. This has happened, I'm honoring it. It's in completion. We want to be able to help our participants do this at the end of a program or a workshop or a one-on-one work, whatever it is. So how do we do this? There's lots of different ways. You can get really creative. You can do rituals, you know, all of that. I'll give you just a couple of little things. So first of all, just one thing I often like to do is I'll have pretty paper, or if it's online, I'll ask people to just have like a pretty piece of paper. And I invite people to write a sacred commitment that they want to make to themselves now that they've completed this work. And you can get, you know, depending on the work that you do and your energy, you know, you can get just like really deep with that. You can do a whole slew of body-centric, you know, things, you know, to bring it to their body, their heart. They can initiate themselves. They can use oils. They can, right? For those of you that are into the depths, we'll be looking at lots of different stuff around that. Another thing that you can do to help people seal it in and look to the future is have people write down, so what are your next steps? What are, just bullet list, the three things you're going to do next when you walk out of this retreat. Another really beautiful but simple way to help seal it in is to ask people to come up with a word or a short phrase of how they're feeling now that they've completed, and everybody can go around and say that word or that short phrase. Another way to seal it in and look to the future is through gratitudes, right? To spend time making a list or just being in gratitude for all that's happened. There are tons of other, you can get so creative, right? Like you can make people diplomas at the end of the program or give them sometimes, you know, if it's like a very special long group or mastermind, I've bought jewelry and we've initiated the jewelry and I've given it at the end as you know, part, and of course you know they set intentions on it, sealing it. Like there's so many different ways to seal it in through drawing something, through creating something. But again, just the plain old paper and pencil, you know, like write it down. That can work really well too. Okay, so we're almost at time for today. I know that there are some more questions, and I'm going to open up for them in a moment. But a couple things before I take questions. First of all, I want you, speaking of takeaways, I want you to write down what are your top three takeaways from our call today. So we looked at all of the steps before your own methodology, inspiring people to their why, helping them locate where they are, speaking to resistance. We looked at what happens after the methodology. So what are, and these can be inner or outer takeaways. It can be on something I specifically spoke about or something you free associated because I was talking about it, something you're learning about yourself or your work. But I want you to write down three takeaways, three things that feel important to you. And then here's your homework for this week. There aren't any worksheets this week. What I want to invite you to do is, if you are still working on step four, you know, your methodology, I want you to continue with that. Remember that I'm here with anything that you need. I think I need to look at my calendar for tomorrow. I might do another pop-up Q&A session. I'll let you guys know in the Facebook group. Your homework is to begin to integrate what we looked at today, steps 1, 2, and 3, and 5, and 6, both into the larger curriculum, but also I think it's going to help you a lot when you think about your step-by-steps, right? How do you want to integrate this into even your step-by-step curriculum? All right. We are almost at time, but I have time to hang on the call. I'd love to hear some of your takeaways, star two, and I'd also love to answer any questions that you have, star two. What can I help you with, or what would you like to share by way of takeaway or aha? Lucia.
Hi again.
Hi.
So my most important takeaway is that pre-framing saves time and reframing. That was really, really helpful to adjust these things.
Oh, good.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's a biggie. It's really a biggie.
Yeah. Yeah. And my question is, when I do, like I shared last week, a combined session of like having 1 hour of coaching and like 1 hour of having them do an exercise, would you place the exercise in front or after the coaching?
I think it depends on what the methodology step is. If you want to give me an example, I can tell you, because I just think it would depend on what the content piece is.
Right. So an example would be that the couple comes in the session or onto the call, and then I would ask them, what's up for you this week? What do you have for coaching? Or that we first do an exercise. We're starting breathing together. We're starting eye gazing. We're starting sacred touch. And then they can tell me what comes up during this exercise.
Got it. Okay, I was sorry. I was getting mixed up. I thought you meant for the group, but you meant for the one-on-one. So what I probably would set it up as coaching, exercise, coaching. Probably the first 30 minutes would be coaching, you know, what's up, what's coming up for you, and to look a little bit more at what's going on, what are the obstacles, what are the fears, what are the miscommunications, what is it that they don't know, you know, all of that. And then based on all of that, I would pick the exercise that I would teach them or continue with them, and I would do that. And then I'd probably have 30 minutes at the end for processing and further coaching.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
brilliant.
You're welcome. Great question.
Great. See you next week. Bye.
Bye. Who is this? 7060. Are you there?
Joanna, can you hear me?
Yeah. Is that Millie?
Yes. You know what? I'm calling from my cell every time for some reason. It's a different number, so I'm sorry. So my takeaway today is resistance. I absolutely love how you outlined the three aspects of handling resistance, like name it or call it, and normalize it and offer a solution. I was so happy to realize that I actually did that without knowing, without outlining the steps. And I remember my client, she said, I feel so stupid when it comes to investing. And I said, it's not that you feel stupid, you just feel afraid. So I named it. And then I said, it's absolutely normal because you haven't done this. Like, who doesn't feel afraid when they have to do something they haven't done before? So I normalized it. And then I said, this training is meant to offer you the skills that you will feel more competent about making this decision. So but I never structured this way. It gave me so much clarity. Now I know that, you know, whatever resistance may come up, that's how I should address this.
Exactly.
Yeah, so beautiful. Thank you so much for this. And the question that I have for you today, Joanna, is about, I don't know if it relates directly to this course, how do you name programs? Because this is, for some reason, a big deal for me. For me, name is a very sacred process. Like when I feel aligned with a name, then I feel excited and it just changes something in my energy.
I hear you.
So,
it is not really the topic of this course, and I will also say it's not. It is not in my total zone of genius. So I just want to out that. But when I name courses or when I support clients to name courses, there are a couple of things that I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So one is, what's the end point? What is it that the ideal client for this really wants? That may make its way into the title, right? The result, in one way or another. Mm-hmm. The second question I'm asking is, what's the energy that the client wants to bring to the results, whether they even realize it or not? Because that will add maybe an adjective in there that really speaks to the client and also to their values, right? So the energy is also, I also think about what are the values, right? So for example, for Sacred Depths, it's the Sacred Depths coach training. How I came up with Sacred Depths is because that's both a result that my ideal client wants. They want to be able to go deep to create real results and real transformation. And I think I even have results and transformation in the subtitle of the program. But it's also a value of my ideal client. My ideal client values going deep and going into the layers. They don't want the surface stuff. So I'll give you those as tips to think about it.
Okay, all right, that totally makes sense. And do you suggest a particular length? Should it be short, or it doesn't? Should it include kind of like a title and subtitle in the name of the program, or it should be very short?
I always end up with a title and a subtitle because I have so much to say. but yeah, I mean, what I generally recommend is a little bit of a shorter title. And then if you want to have a subtitle that, on the sales page or in your materials that explains more, that's a headline right underneath, you can do that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. All right. Thank you so much, Joanna. Thank you. See you next week.
You're welcome. Great. You're welcome. We've got one more hand raised. 9602.
It's Iris. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share one of my takeaways, which is I'm giving a 3-day program on brainstorming and creative thinking for one of my corporate clients in the fall. And my mind just kept going back to that, and that I'm so glad that I haven't started the curriculum yet. I mean, in broad strokes, but not in detail. And I can really see how I can use these steps in strengthening that. And it's not something I might have done otherwise for a corporate client. That makes sense.
I love it. Yeah, I'm so happy, first of all, that you're applying it to that. And I'm really happy that you're mentioning it here because it 100% can be applied to corporate clients. Like, this stuff is not only for one kind of person or for spiritual or for deep. Like, yes, of course, for all of that. But it really, it's for any kind of learning journey, and corporate people are going on learning journeys. They may not think of it that way. They still need these steps.
Yeah. Yeah, and beautiful. I might phrase some things differently, but they need to be part of that. So
Yes. The words you use may be different, but the concepts, yeah, they're so important. I'm so glad. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. And Chrissy.
Hey, Joanna. I have two kind of mini questions.
Mm-hmm.
One is, I feel like whenever we're on these calls, people are so good about just sharing their insights or ahas. And I've noticed sometimes in my calls, if I'm like, share what you're celebrating, or share, you know, what you're really taking away from this course, or, you know, that sometimes it's hard to have a lot of participation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried a few things and it's gotten better, but I just was wondering if you have any thoughts of maybe pre-framing or adjusting that.
So some of it is in the steps 1, 2, and 3 that we looked at. And so I would go back and make sure that that's in there. And also, this is one of the things we're going to look at. You'll be with me in September for Into the Depths, and so we'll get even deeper. You know, we'll look, because it's also a facilitation thing, and it also has to do with the community and the sisterhood that you're creating and the willingness for people to be open and vulnerable. There's kind of a lot of different facilitation ingredients that go into it as well. But what I would say for now is you may want to address the resistance. Again, like, I'm really big on naming and normalizing and giving a solution, and so you may want to say to the group, you know, I've noticed that, you know, we do have some shares, and when they happen, they're really nice, but I've noticed that there's been a little bit of tentativeness around sharing, and, you know, specifically around celebrations and takeaways. And this is really normal, because celebrations and takeaways, they're actually really related. They're about really honoring yourself for all that you're learning and all the ways that you're moving forward. And generally speaking, human beings are not taught how to celebrate themselves. And they're not taught how to honor their learning. And so it's hard to do that, and then it's even harder to do it in front of other people who you haven't been in person with. You know, we've all been online, but we haven't been in the quote-unquote room together. And so, I want to acknowledge all of that, and here's what I want you guys to know. Yes, in this program, I'm teaching you about business strategies, and it's about growing your business 100%, but that's not the only reason why you're here, whether you realize it or not. The other reason why you're here is to grow into who you're meant to be as an entrepreneur and as a person, and part of that process is learning how to really honor yourself and celebrate yourself, and also be seen. If you want to be seen out there for your business, I want to invite you to be willing to be seen in here. And so I really want to encourage you guys to start sharing your celebrations and your takeaways. What do you think about that?
I love it so much. That feels amazing.
Cool. I'm glad you asked.
And thank you. Can I ask one little other one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's not little, but what I've noticed, too, in the 3-month program, that people all start off really amazing, and they're all there, and then by the end, it trickles off. Like, I had less people on the live call for the group program, and so it feels like there isn't that, like, closure. for some of the people who aren't on that last call, or maybe they feel behind and they're not, you know, and so I know there's a lot of facilitation and pre-framing and learning so much, you know, how to bring people forward more powerfully, but is that common that people trail
it
off
is.
By then? And then, like, how do you do the integration and the celebration?
Yeah, so you want to, sometimes you want to pre-frame that. Like, it's really common to start falling off. You know, why does that happen for you, right? So you can, that if that's something that you know happens for your people, that's something that you can address in the beginning and give people solutions to stay. But then I always give, I mean, part of it is just natural, especially if it's a little bit of a longer program. And I just always give reminders at the end, like, oh, we have our last call. It's, you know, it's going to be amazing if you can make it live. You know, so I try to also do that. So the pre-framing in the beginning is important, or even halfway through, again, is important. And the reminders are important. But then, you know, sometimes there is just a little bit of that natural attrition will happen, especially if it's we just want to try to get, I think it's not about having zero attrition, but it's about lessening it for you a bit.
Yeah, and I think having more people who are in the same place from the get-go, you know, not having people at such different stages is really going to change that, because some people, like, it doesn't even make sense for them to listen to call eight because they're really still in one.
That's what I was going to say. I know you had an issue with people, like, catching up and not getting through, you know, all of that. So that's a reason for people to not show up. Yeah, so the more that you can modulate that to the aligned place, which you're doing, I think the more results you'll see there.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Such great questions, everyone, and takeaways. Thank you, everybody, for all that you brought forward. I hope this was helpful for you. I'm thinking about all of you. I'm here for you if there's anything you need, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.